B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Now, Rich, I have no idea what this is.
All right. Well, I found something this weekend on the internet, and this is going to be something that's going to consume me for the next week. And that is that one of our favorite people as of late, one of the more interesting human beings would be Phil Esposito, because we know that obviously he was a Boston Bruin and somewhat of a legend, and now he does the color commentary for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
A team that he is responsible basically for bringing to Tampa.
Yep.
He was the GM there, right, John?
And almost single-handedly ruined the franchise. But he was a horrible executive.
But just think about this, is that, because I read his book and he's adamant about this, that he brought the team to Tampa, and now he's doing color commentary on the radio.
And he sounds like he's truly enjoying his job.
Joseph. Trips Bjorkstrand and a penalty coming up.
Joseph
is after it in the far corner. He couldn't get it away from Clendenning. Left circle Panarin. Cross ace Dubois. Right circle. Put it in. Front. Save made. Score on the rebound. Bjorkstrand. But it's 4-3.
I just like I said, Jesus. What are we doing?
Cross the line. Right circle. McDonough pulls up. Ryan McDonough. A little drop beat. Chernak over his stick.
No.
And here's Foligno on a breakaway the other way. Foligno's in alone. Score.
Golly, what a bad play.
All right, the first time I ever heard him, I listened to the game for about 5 minutes in my car, and he swore. So, like, literally, and I'm like, who is this?
Well, Fred, I have found in the darkest corners of the internet, there is a show called Next Sports Star that is a call-in internet radio show.
Oh, boy.
That Phil Esposito is a regular weekly guest on.
Oh, sweet.
And sometimes they don't even, sometimes, most of the time, they don't even talk about hockey. Now, I've said how he, Phil Esposito, just sounds like your old, like, man, your dad or your grandpa just selling to the TV. Would you like to hear Phil Esposito's opinion on global warming?
Oh, boy.
So, now you have to understand.
It's hot in Tampa.
There's two people live in the studio, and then there's this guy named, there's two people on the phone. There's Bill Waters, who is like the assistant, used to be the assistant GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's now like a sportscaster. And then there's Phil Esposito. You'll know when it's Phil Esposito talking. There's no mistaking.
Complete indifference.
There's no mistaking which one's Phil Esposito, which one is not. So let's get to the audio, shall we? This is from the dark corners of the internet. This might have had, I think it's had like 300 total views.
Okay, so this is internet only.
Internet only radio show that Phil Esposito is a weekly guest on, and they don't talk about sports. That's not the only thing they talk about. Sometimes they just say, let's just talk about global warming.
By the way, I was listening, and Perry, you and Frankie believe in global warming.
I didn't say, Frankie said, I said, all I know is it's hot in hell in here. I didn't say anything more than that.
I believe in it. I believe in it. I believe that. I believe in global warming. I believe that the countries that are habitual polluters in the world, like Russia, China.
And of course, let's us go solar and every other country do the same.
I don't agree with that. I don't believe in going solar, but I believe if you in your backyard long enough, the is going to come in your house, and the whole house is going to be full of and I think that's what people have been doing. But I don't believe in this bureaucratic bullshit about solar energy and put everything solar. But I believe that countries just having total disregard and polluting the ocean, going in the middle of the night and dropping toxic poisons in the ocean and poisoning the fish.
I'm in Brazil where there's in the water.
Now.
I mean,
is this Carl Sagan show?
This is your granddad yelling at the news.
Oh my God.
What about these Brazilians are crapping in the water, except not saying crap?
I just see them with pipes and tweed jackets on.
This is like, yes. It's Nova.
William F. Buckley sitting there. Now says, what are your opinion on global warming? Well, they crap in the water in Brazil. Oh, interesting. You know, the case of global warming is very controversial. You know, your thoughts, Mr. Esposito? They crap in the water.
Toxic poisons in the ocean and poisoning the fish.
I'm in Brazil where there's in the water.
Interesting point, Mr. Esposito. He is something else. What is the point of this show?
Old guys yelling.
Like, why would he agree to do it?
Every week.
I mean, yeah, well, that's oh, yeah. You know, they're chopping the shit out of the rainforest.
I mean, Jesus, I am so over that f***ing bullshit. I think back when I was a kid, 12 years old, it was 1955, 56, 54. It was hotter than f***ing hell in the soup.
He makes a good point. That's why when you global warming.
When you were growing up, what was your take on what would life? First of all, can you figure out how old you were when you were 12? It's your birthday. Birthday
plus 12.
It was 1955, 56, 54. It was hotter than f***ing hell in the soup.
Yes, the soup was hot. Oh, my God. How did this come to be?
I don't know, but thank you. Thank you, Mr. Esposito.
It had like 300 views?
Yeah, like no one's watching it.
We didn't have air conditioning, so don't give me this global warming.
Whoa. He just made a really good point.
We didn't have air conditioning. So don't give me this global warming. And in the wintertime, you freeze your balls off.
Okay, well, let me tell you about Toronto. So I was born and raised here. And I remember when I was a kid, there was snow from, I'd say, November right till the end of April.
Absolutely right.
I don't know what everybody's driving SUVs for in Toronto because there's no snow. And the world has changed by 2.3, 2.4 degrees. My producers could give you the exact rate of change. There's glaciers that are melting. They say
that is so full of shit.
It's full of shit that the glaciers are melting, Phil.
You fucking ass.
What the hell is going on?
That's a 78-year-old man yelling in a cloud is what that is.
No, it's... Why did that get him so riled up?
Glaciers! Oh, that's where you cross the line.
That is so full of shit.
Full of shit that the glaciers are melting, Phil.
You fucking ass.
The hell is he so pissed off about?
You bring glaciers into this. We've gone next level. You really pissed off Phil Esposito. We're going to go glaciers now?
I wonder if he thinks a glacier is something else.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I like the reasonable one swearing every other word, too.
He might be confused. You know, he gets taken into it.
That is so full of shit.
Full of shit that the glaciers are melting, Phil.
You fucking ass.
You're saying I'm full of shit because the glaciers are melting?
Talking about you're the most intelligent guy I know.
Okay, forget about washing my face and then slapping it. Yeah. I'm telling you right now, there's glaciers melting. If you don't believe in your ideology that global warming is a fact and it's an aberration of what humanity is doing to the planet, that's your prerogative.
Yeah,
but I believe that if you keep abusing the environment, you're going to kill everything. It's just like my dog. I let him piss on my grass. He kills it.
Somebody said we need Tommy Heinsohn under this call.
It's just like my dog. I let him piss on my grass. He kills it.
Yes, the urine debate.
I think back when I was a kid, 12 years old, it was 1955, 56, 54. It was hotter than f***ing hell in the soup. So don't give me this shit global warming. And in the wintertime, you freeze your f***ing balls up.
Glaciers
that are melting. They say that that is so full of shit. Full of shit that the glaciers are melting, Phil. You fucking ass.
Just get Heinzen in there. You gotta be kidding me. Just have Heinzen. Just I want something called Heinzen and Esposito yell at stuff.
No, Heinzen will just be like, I'll show you global woman.
I'm in Brazil where there's in the water.
So he said, does Phil Esposito live in Brookline?
Oh, God. he probably did.
This does sound like a conversation just on a park bench in Brookline.
Yeah.
And also, they're chopping the shit out of the rainforest.
How many episodes?
Chopping the plank out of. Dude, there's like 90.
Oh,
and it's
my God.
Every possible topic you could talk about.
Good for you finding it.
I mean, this is just.
How the hell did you find it?
Yeah. Maybe I was looking for like. Or someone might have sent it to me a while back. I just let it sit. And then I was like, oh, my goodness gracious. Phil Esposito, what are you doing?
That's why it's always important to open your emails. Because you might be given. So basically, this takes us through the summer.
If I just angry Esposito.
Phil's great. I told you the first time I 30 seconds of, or 3 minutes of a game, I heard him swear. All right, so there you have it. We'll be right back.
So don't give me this global warming, and in the wintertime, you freeze your balls up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Down. Download the Sports Hub app today.
.985 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We got tickets for Game 7. Toronto at Boston, that's coming up at 7:50. Pre-game at 6:30, puck drops at 7, that's here. And Dan Rosen, senior writer for the NHL, or I'm sorry, for senior writer for NHL.com, joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Rosen, hello.
How you doing, guys?
We are doing well. There's nothing like a Game 7 to piss you off and and make you drink. But as if that was, I needed a huge excuse. But we're looking at this and things, home ice hasn't seemed to mean a ton in this series. Does that change tonight? Is Game 7 a different animal?
Yeah, that's the game where coaches and managers and players sometimes will tell you, like, well, home ice advantage doesn't matter unless you get to a Game 7. And when you get to a Game 7, then you finally get to take advantage of that last change, the home crowd, you're in your own environment, all that stuff. So maybe it does, but I honestly think all that stuff is mental. Maybe not the last change thing, but because that obviously involves coaches and coaching. But I think the rest of that stuff is mental. I just think Game 7, it comes down to the team that gets the better start has the advantage, and that doesn't have to be the home team. And you always hear about it, the first 4, 5, 6 minutes of the game, nerves are there, you got to get it in, settle in. The team that makes the first mistake is going to be in a lot of trouble in a Game 7. I just think that's how it goes sometimes. Now, you've seen Boston against Toronto come back, and it doesn't make a difference, right? But it doesn't always happen that way. It has twice against the Leafs, but it doesn't always happen that way. I think you have to look for the start. I think you have to look for the team that's jumping a little bit, that's putting a lot of pressure on, that's controlling the puck in the first 10 or 15 minutes of that game, and that's where you see the advantage. Maybe it's the home team. I don't know, but we'll see.
Because the thing is that the Bruins, when they play a certain way, they're the better team, and it just is frustrating because, like you said, when they are physical, when they have their forecheck going, it doesn't seem like Toronto can do much against that. But then there's games where they come out completely flat.
Yeah.
How is that possible? How can you know the recipe for doing something and just not do it?
Well, there's another team that's trying to stop you from doing it, and they've got you scouted pretty well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I look back, I mean, the series I covered in the first round was the Tampa Bay-Columbus series, so I'll speak to that, right? Tampa Bay dominated the regular season, right? They were unstoppable. Well, Columbus had them scouted. They went in and they had a game plan. They stole game one, and then they found a way to execute what they wanted to do to slow down the Tampa Bay Lightning. Toronto Maple Leafs have a game plan for how to stop the Bruins, and it is to take them out of that physical type of game. It is to spread them out a little bit. It is to make them, as you say, look flat. And if they're able to get to their game early, that pushes the Bruins away from theirs. And if they get a lead, now the Bruins have to chase it a little bit, and that spreads them out, and it gets them out of their game early. That's why I think the start can be so important. If the Bruins are able to get to what they want to do and push it, even if they don't score, even if it doesn't result in a goal in the first 10 minutes of the game, but if they establish their type of game like they did, like the game they played in Game 6, which I think is their best game, then that's going to immediately put Toronto on their heels and start Toronto going, okay, how do we adjust? What do we have to do? And that's what they're going to be doing on the bench. And when you do that, you've got the team guessing a little bit. And that's the difference with the start of the game. And I think that's where the Bruins are. There's another team out there trying to stop you from doing what you're doing. But the Bruins have the experience. I mean, Charles in his 13th Game 7. I think Bergeron and Marchand are in their 10th. And Krejci, the same thing. They've got the experience and know how to handle a Game 7 more than the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've got to use that early in the game.
There's a whole other thing surrounding Toronto, and for a hockey-crazed city like this, it's a stat that's been repeated over and over and over again. Historically speaking, the visiting teams, it's kind of a coin flip for Game 7s, but for Toronto, they can't win road Game 7s. I think it's 5 straight road losses in a Game 7 for them.
Yeah, it's something along. I did see that stat. Yeah, it is alarming, but that's sort of how you don't win a playoff series for 15 years either. You know, yeah. you can't. But it goes beyond that too. To be honest with you guys, like I appreciate all those stats and everything like that. But you know, John Tavares has never experienced a Game 7 with the Leafs. Jake Muzzin, the same thing. You know, there's a number of guys there that haven't. Austin Matthews has, what, one? Marner's got one.
What about the goaltender?
You know what? He's the difference maker, right? Because even if Boston comes out and establishes the way it wants to play, if Freddie Anderson can hold his team in there and make some big saves early, it's going to allow the Toronto Maple Leafs to flip it on the Bruins a little bit. It's going to give them some confidence. And is he going to be able to do it? I think he's going to be able to do it tonight. I think, you know what? It's one of those things where you lose Game 6 the way you lose it, and you're not great in your own building. You're going up against Game 7 against a team you can't beat in multiple Game 7s now. You're on the road. Everybody's doubting you. You need a breakthrough moment if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. You've got to get over the hump against the Bruins. Nobody thinks you can do it now. Maybe tonight's the night they finally do it, you know?
Well, Freddie Anderson, of course, he gets treated differently in the press in Toronto than just about any other player on that team. And the same thing happens here. Tuukka Rask is a very polarizing figure here in Boston. From a national perspective, how do you see him?
I think Tuukka Rask has been a very good goalie in the NHL for a very long time. There are just some games where you're wondering, where is Tuukka Rask? What happened to Tuukka Rask, right? But if I'm going to go into a playoff series, I mean, there's only a handful of goalies probably that you'd say, all right, give me him over Tuukka Rask. I think you have to look at it from a bigger picture perspective with goaltenders like that. And Tuukka's been around a long time. He's won a lot of games. And when you play that many games, you're going to have some stinkers along the way. I would feel good if I had Tuukka Rask in my net right now. I would feel good going into a Game 7, as I'm sure the Bruins do. I mean, look, you look at the series. He's posted a .921 save percentage, and I think a .254 goals against average. Those are winning numbers in the playoffs. You're holding your team. Your team scores 3 goals, they win. That's the key. And you look at Freddie Anderson, it's a little bit higher, but he's still pretty good. But, you know, if you have a .250 and a .920, those are winning numbers in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, people seem to blame everything on Tuukka Rask here.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I don't understand it. Maybe you. Why is that? Is it just because he's the goalie and he's the polarizing position?
I think that also when he's on, even he shows like very little emotion. I mean, he used to be really emotional, obviously. When
he used to be, yeah. I think he's just calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, I just think that people.
It's also the salary. It's the salary and the length of his contract, and people think, well, he's being paid all of this money, makes $7 million a year, and in other sports that's not a lot, but in hockey terms it is. And when you get paid that much and you get that big contract, I think people around here believe he should stand on his head every night.
Yeah, well, it doesn't always work that way. But I do understand that line of thinking. And there have been times where you're just like, oh, Tuukka, oh, man, you know. But that's like that with every goaltender in the NHL at some point or another. I think he's a top 10 goalie in the league. I think, you know, I would take Tuukka Rask on my team to win me a game seven if you know, if you laid out a bunch of choices, I bet you he'd be, you know, within the top three or four choices of goalies, you know, who have legitimate chances on who are on good teams right now. I just, you know, and he's a reason that he's a big reason why they're a good team. I think there needs to be confidence in Tuukka Rask, and he's handled himself well. He's been pretty good in this series. They're in a game seven. He's got experience. You got to have some faith in him.
All right, but it sounds like you're leaning towards Toronto tonight.
The only and I don't have a legitimate, like, you know, tactical X's and O's reason for it. I just look at it and I say, it's got to be that they're too talented for it not to come through eventually. And you lose game six, you blow an opportunity. It's been win-loss this whole series. You blow an opportunity on home ice in game six. Now everybody doubts you. Now you think you're going into Boston. You're playing the team you can't beat in the game seven. It just seems like it's like a sports. It's a natural sports story. We're like, well, nobody thinks you're going to do it. So here you go. Now they're going to win the game. Freddie Anderson will step up big time. Morrow will be great. Tavares may get a goal. You know, Matthews will be terrific. And then there you go. It's just that's just the gut that I get out of that.
All right. Well, we'll see. Dan Rosen, senior writer for NHL.com. We appreciate the time.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate it. There you go. Bruins don't stand a chance.
It would be the most Bruins thing ever to play like that on the road, come home and lay a massive egg, wouldn't it?
Yep.
I mean, I know Haggerty had a tweet to that effect, but I mean, it would be, if the Bruins went out and lost 3-0 tonight and got dominated, would you really be surprised?
Nope.
Yeah.
I could see starting flat again and Toronto getting a goal.
And then gets away from them real quick. I just saw a stat, by the way, a couple of minutes ago that I wasn't aware of. David Krejci has never scored a game seven goal. And I think he's been in 9 or 10 of these. Yeah. It's amazing.
And yet they need him in the postseason.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Jobs.com.
Watch Toucher and Rich on Twitch. Twitch. Follow the Sports Hub on Twitch.tv for live shows and reruns. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We got tickets at 7:50 this morning for your chance to see the Bruins take on the Maple Leafs tonight in a do-or-die Game 7 at the Garden. John and I both in agreement off the air that this is a loss for the Bruins, and it's not.
Now, why is that?
That magical thing.
I said it would be the most Bruins thing ever to play like champions in Game 6 and then show up and lose 3-0 tonight at home in Game 7.
I just think there's no predicting this game.
No, of course not. Of course not. But, I mean, would you be surprised if the Bruins lost tonight?
I'm not surprised either way, because I don't know what team's showing up. I don't. Yeah. So I can't predict.
You just don't know one game to another. They're better than this team. They are better top to bottom than this team, especially defensively.
Well, no. The Maple Leafs have one defensive player. They have one defenseman.
Yeah.
And other than that, nothing.
A goaltender that's playing above his head and one defensive player.
Then why do you think they're going to lose?
Because it would be the most Bruins thing ever.
Why? You know, the Bruins have overachieved most of the season. Well, so why would it be the most Bruins thing for them to just like crash and burn?
I don't think they've overachieved.
Neither do I.
I don't think anybody thought they were going to have that many wins by the end of the year.
I'm looking at this team, and they have
overachieved. Marchand had 100 points this year. A lot of these guys have career years.
He's been
Krejci's played every game. I mean, he's exceeded expectations. A lot of these guys had career years.
On the contrary, I think Krejci has lived up to expectations this year.
You mean he's the highest paid? He's the highest paid player on this team.
Yeah, but look at the last several years. Would you have expected at the beginning of this year that Krejci would have had this kind of season?
I've waited
and just
this long
about
for Krejci to be healthy and perform this well. I've always thought he was capable of this.
But would you have expected that would have been the case, seeing the way he has been
Past history, but you're telling me Krejci lasts a whole season and plays well? I would have said, well, it's about time.
But that is an overachievement. If you look at compared to the last couple of years.
I think he's living up to expectations.
Did Marchand overachieve?
No.
Marchand did not overachieve.
He had 100 points. He had 100 points. He scored more. He has more points than you would have expected out of him. But as far as leading the team offensively, no.
There's a difference between overachieving and having a good year. I mean, Marchand has been one of the better forwards in the NHL for some time now. Yeah, I think that it's...
So it's a top line for Team Canada in the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean,
and he still overachieved.
Rich, I guess the point, I can't speak for Fred, but the point I'm trying to make is you look at the way the Bruins performed all year, and you look at Pastrnak, who duplicated what he did last year. You look at Bergeron, who has been Bergeron, and you look at Marchand, who, 100 points is above and beyond what was expected, but still carried the torch for the offense for most of the year. I thought, okay... You know, I expected most of this from the top line. Now, you're telling me DeBrusque is going to score 30. That's overachieving
right.
to me.
Yep. Well, that was surprising.
Yeah, he's another guy who overachieved.
But in the balance of it, you look at these two rosters, and you look at, obviously, the top two centers for Toronto are otherworldly. But you look at the Bruins' top line, 330 goal scorers. DeBrusque almost had 30 by himself. Not just good, but really good defensive players. And the way that Coyle slotted in and Johansson, when he was healthy, slotted in, and you looked at this series, I thought the Bruins should have won this thing in five.
And you keep giving me reasons to why they probably should win this game. Once again, you're not telling me why they're going to lose.
Because with all of this, they have not performed up to expectations in this series.
Okay, wouldn't that be then a case of maybe water is about to find its level?
No, it would be based on empirical data from what I've had in the last six games, I'd say it's a coin flip at best.
And it's been win-loss, win-loss, win-loss.
They've
win-loss.
Lost two games now, on their now, home now ice that, in this series.
Once again, that I agree with. I'm just trying to figure out why you think they're going to lose.
They've lost two games on home ice in this series already.
Okay, that I understand. But they've also looked really good game six,
in the other
game
building.
Two. Sure, in the other building. So, I mean, so you think that it's because they're playing
at
home.
I don't think home ice matters
that's
at
why
all.
Lose.
I don't think home ice matters at all
either.
Tonight.
I don't either. Except for Marner, when they can put the Bergeron line
yes.
up there.
Yes, last change helps in this case.
The last
yes,
change helps in that instance.
I also don't think anyone predicted that this team was going to have the second best record in the NHL.
Third best.
Okay, yes. In the East.
Yes.
Yes. I don't think anybody predicted that.
Yes.
At the beginning of the season.
Yes.
Yeah, that was what
sure, if the Bruins lose tonight, the teams with the top three best record in the NHL are all out in the first round.
Oh, well, this will be insane. What if Washington loses, too?
Wide open, especially if Carolina wins game seven. Wide open.
Yeah, and that's another reason why they're going to lose.
Because they have that
everybody
bat
else
in front of them.
Because the Lightning did, so that's the
You don't have
pattern.
To worry about Washington. And those are demons that have not been exercised
well,
yet.
Well, now that I understand.
Beating Holtby in a series, that won't happen, it hasn't happened. Even if you get by Columbus, then you have that specter of the Capitals, the defending Stanley Cup champions,
right?
If you
want to just look at the whole playoffs as a whole, yeah, and
if,
say that
if Carolina wins
down,
game seven, man, then it is wide open.
Dude, the Stars have moved on.
Nashville being out in the first round was a big surprise. I agree.
Now that okay,
which
now,
is why the Bruins
because it's like a clear path to the Cup.
I know it's scary.
It won't get any easier than this.
No, this is they're the best team left in the tournament. Even though
now they're the best team left in the tournament.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
is that they're the best team left in the tournament, and Now, if they play the Capitals, I don't like it at all.
No.
I don't like them to beat the Capitals at all. And that's not just some hocus-pocus stuff. Like,
no, if you've watched this team in the last 5 years, you
and the Capitals are coming off the Stanley Cup, and, I mean, they're wildly talented, and they have a goaltender that they have no success against. But I don't have a good feeling going into tonight. Just based entirely on the way that they played the end of the season and in this series. That's the only reason.
I also think that you've got, that game five was just awful. I keep thinking about game five.
And at home?
Because you thought that before that, you know, the first line had finally woken up. You know, like Pastrnak had that big game. And then finally, in game six, Marchand has a good game, and then you get DeBrusque back. So any predicting of this game is wrong. That's why I'm kind of shocked that you're so certain that they're going to lose.
Not certain, just a bad feeling.
Yes.
Having a defeatist attitude going, this is healthy. It's healthy to think that way, because then it will be a nice surprise if they win.
I like that.
And you'll feel better.
I like where your head's at here. I like that. But that's a good way of looking at it.
That's not why I feel that way. I feel that way because it's been win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. And the Bruins have looked extremely flat on their home ice outside of game two.
Well, they're going to fix the ice, hopefully. They've called out the ice in the TD Garden, and hopefully that's going
to... The ice doctor is going to come in and fix things?
I have to tell you, if you have two players...
Oh, I agree.
...and an away game, say something about the ice, there's no way you don't take extreme
measures.
Who
is the ice doctor in the National Hockey... What is it, Toma? Is it Toma?
How do you know the name?
How the hell would
I... No, Toma's like the field doctor for, like, Major League ballparks or whatever. I don't know. I want to know who the ice doctor is. I don't know who that is.
There's something I will forget as soon as we go to commercial.
But there's no way, after getting called out, that the TD Garden didn't do something.
I would hope so. I mean, it's a billion-dollar investment. I would hope that they would have some sort of way to make it more to the likings of the players. I mean, they're not asking for caviar on the plane. They're asking for a smooth ice surface. All right. Well, Russell Westbrook has it out with the media, which is pretty smart.
I mean, there's a decent amount of players that need to get over themselves. Russell Westbrook has moved himself to the top.
And
of the
by
list.
The way, especially when you're like a budding fashion icon and you want to do all this stuff off the court, it's a pretty good idea to start alienating everyone.
How about when you've underachieved in your career? Like, to be as good as he is and to underachieve. I mean, that you want to talk about an underachiever. Russell Westbrook, look right at him.
Yeah, and I'm saying that he wants to do a lot of stuff that he's going to need the media to help hype, and he doesn't want to do it this way. All right, we'll be right back with Bruins tickets.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Brady won't throw me the ball because he has no trust in me.
Rich.
I have a super dry tongue. Look.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. Car number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see the Bruins take on the Maple Leafs tonight in a do-or-die Game 7 at the Garden. Experience the excitement of the 2019 Boston Bruins playoffs. Get your tickets now at Ticketmaster.com/Bruins.
All right, so Russell Westbrook has had an interesting year, because one of the things that he made news for was, you remember when on the side of the court there was a little boy who, like, touched him and, you know, gave him, like, a little push, which you shouldn't do. But he made a big deal out of it. I mean, a big deal. He turned around and, like, talked to his father and, like, scolded the family and then talked about it afterwards. But even in that case, I gave him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I was like, maybe he was just sick of, you know, all these people saying things and doing things on the sideline, thinking they get away with everything, even though it was a kid.
Yeah, even though
a kid, like seven.
A kid touched you, and then you acted like you were in a bunker during World War II.
And I don't know why, but at the time, I was just like, all right, maybe it was just they caught him at the wrong time, and he was pissed at something, and he ended up going off. With a kid, you would think you would have that filter that you wouldn't quite do that the way you did.
No, you would turn around, and you would just let it go.
Just like, all right, kid. You know.
Yeah, it's not that guy with the cowboy hat that goes to the Lakers games, you know, grabbing your balls.
Yeah.
It's a kid that, like, who touched you lightly on the back. I would think that you could... I mean, the way he talked about it is that if a guy came and smashed
him in the head.
The people have no respect. You know, we're out there. Like, you're so vulnerable. Ooh.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Imagine to play basketball and have to be next to someone.
So Russell Westbrook has had this thing going on with a reporter for the Oklahoma City paper. His name is, it's the Oklahoman, Barry Trammell.
Oklahoman... Always controversial.
I read about this.
It's where they're out to get you, apparently. Oklahoman.
That Oklahoma City market is very hard to navigate.
Can you imagine if this guy played in New York? I mean, could you imagine if he worked? Could you imagine if there was like a Dan Shaughnessy or something out there? I mean, honestly, like his head would explode. So he doesn't like this guy. And this was at a press conference. By the way, they're down 3-1 to Portland. That team should not be losing to Portland.
Right.
They shouldn't. I mean, you have Paul George, who was borderline MVP status this year.
He was for a while.
He was. And then you've got Russell Westbrook, who, in my opinion, has wildly underachieved. I mean, think about it. Not only with this team that you've got here, but you played with Kevin Durant all these years and weren't able to do jack. So here is Russell Westbrook after getting asked a question during, I think this was game 3.
Yeah.
Here he is afterwards.
Barry Trammell with the Oklahoma. And Russell, the first half, both teams struggled offensively. It's a sort of a slug of a game. Both teams got going in the second half. What happened that sort of reversed the tone of this game?
Next question.
Yeah, Russ, the fourth quarter, you got a 15-point lead. They catch up. What happened the last 6, 7, 8 minutes that reversed the momentum and let you guys burst back away?
Kerry Eggers, Portland Tribune. Paul, why did you dunk there at the end of the game?
Next question.
So they're just being jerks to everyone.
Yeah, I like how Paul George is like a little puppy yipping around Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, he's just kind of, I don't want to make my leader mad. I don't want to make him angry.
Next question. All right, well, good. Well, Paul George, that's fine because you don't seem to have a lot of aspirations outside of the court. But Russell Westbrook wants to be this guy. He reminds me of Sean Avery. Like, he wants to be this guy. He wants, you know, all this to happen when he's out of the business. And the thing is that if you act like a complete prick, that's not a good way to build your brand.
Sure, sure. And I know that Westbrook's had this thing with this reporter for a while now, of course, because as you said, the Oklahoman's out
it's
to get you.
It's been 3 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was
3 years, by the way, this guy shows up at every game.
Yeah,
he'll ask Westbrook questions for 3 years after every game, and Westbrook deliberately will not talk to him.
So here he is at the locker. I think this was 2 years ago.
Well, we did a good job executing.
Now, are you upset with something? What
you upset? I just don't like you.
You don't?
No.
Do you not like Nick either?
I love Nick, but I don't like you.
Well, you gave us about the same answers.
Yeah, you got another question?
Okay, so the one good thing about this guy, this Trammell dude, Barry Trammell, is that he continues to keep asking the questions, and he knows that each time Westbrook's going to try to shoot him down. But then there was a situation during the playoffs last year where he went to ask Dragan Mekakopoulos a question. Your man, Steven Adams.
Yeah, Dragan Mekakopoulos was just like, what? I'm a mountain of a man.
So there is, like, you know, the steroided version of Andrew WK sitting behind the desk, and he's not even asking Russell Westbrook a question. Westbrook is sitting next to Dragan Mekakopoulos, and here's what happens.
Steven, second time in 3 games, you guys really struggled when Russell went to the bench. You were out there for part of that. What goes on when he goes to the bench? Why is Houston so successful? And do you sense that they sort of get an energy boost just from him going out of the game?
Hold on, Steven. I don't want nobody to try to split us up. We all one team. Regardless, if I go to the bench, if Steven's on the floor, if I'm off the floor, we in this together. Don't split us up. Don't try to make us go against each other, try to make against Russell and the rest of the guys, Russell against Houston. I don't want to hear that. We in this together. We playing as a team, and that's all that matters. That's it.
Yeah, Russell, I'm not trying to split you up, but twice in three games, you guys have not played well at all. When you've gone to the bench,
that's fine.
I'm just trying to figure out what's going on.
Say, Russell, you ain't played well at all. Say, Russell and the team haven't played well. Don't say when Russell goes out, the team don't play well. It don't matter. We in this together.
That may be, Russell, but I asked Steven a question. And it's a legitimate
question. Me and you. Next question.
It's a legitimate question.
Next question. Next question.
Next question.
No,
I think we're gonna keep the microphone. I had a question for Steven, and it wasn't answered. And I don't understand if Steven wants to say, he still hadn't said anything. If he wants to say, I don't want to answer that, fine. But
next question, please.
I mean, can you imagine, first of all, being Steven Adams sitting there just going, what are you doing?
Right.
I'm a grown-ass man. I can answer my own questions.
Right, I'm five times the size of you. Let's cut this out.
Right, I can eat you and pass you right here in front of everyone.
I'm a Game of Thrones monster.
So, I mean, and now at least they're, like, people are calling him out. And I saw yesterday on the NBA on TNT, Charles Barkley, who might have one of the better relationships with the media just because...
How did Barkley... Well, Barkley didn't get along with the media in Philadelphia, but then he evolved, and that's how he got this gig.
And maybe it's because he learned his lesson.
Yes.
Like, you can't get to that next level.
Right.
And you don't have to kiss their ass.
No.
Just answer the question. That's part of your job. And the way Barkley was stating it last night is like, you know, these guys don't make $30 to $40 million a year just to get up there and play basketball. Part of the job is that you have to communicate with the media. You're going to get interrupted at meals sometimes. You're going to get asked for pictures out in public. That's part of the entire package. And you just don't have a right to tell these people no, because if you don't do that, then that starts killing the whole personality of basketball and selling the product itself.
Yeah. I mean, the NBA, as much as people listening are going to go, you guys think you're so important, the NBA and these leagues need people to cover them. And if you don't believe me, off the top of your head, name in your own mind how many sports websites and networks and radio stations there are. And there's a reason. Because people want to consume it, and when you take those away, those $30 million a year contracts are going to go.
Somebody makes a great point. He said Westbrook makes Kyrie look like a saint. Yeah. I mean, it does kind of put things in perspective.
At least Kyrie speaks. See, I want Embiid.
I want all my guys to be Embiid. I love Joel Embiid. Everything about his game, his persona.
He's a one-man party, Embiid. He really is. He does it all. We're going to come back. We're going to hear Mark Gemelli and find out eventually who is going to the big premiere. That's this evening?
It is going to be, yes.
All right, it's this evening of the Avengers Endgame?
Yes, Endgame.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll have that. No commercials here, just the headline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.